books for a good long time, so I want to talk to you today about kind of the dynamic of where we are in terms of laboratory notebooks and the transition to electronic and how this all relates to data management. So to give you a little bit of a background on data management, I divide data management into really two camps. There's pre-publication data management and there's post-publication data management. And there's a lot of work being done in librarianship in the second area, dealing with data that is associated with journal articles that have already been published. But this talk particularly focuses on the first area because I think, you know, from the scientific perspective, this is where people really need help. They need help organizing their data, they need help managing their data. And there's a lot of reasons why we as librarians should focus on the pre-publication area. First of all, just the basic organization of data will help scientists find their own data. It will save them time and effort. It will also help scientists share data. And even though we think a lot about post-publication sharing, there is pre-publication sharing that happens, especially within one laboratory. And good data management practices will help enable that sharing and help it be very controlled, which is what scientists want. Another reason for pre-publication data management is that it helps the senior researcher or the PI or whoever's in charge of the lab keep track of the data long term. Being here at UW-Madison, we have a life cycle for a lot of our researchers. They're here as graduate students for about 5 years and then they leave. And so the professors who are leading these groups have to have some way of getting access to that data after their students leave, and good data management will definitely help with that. Final reason to consider pre-publication data management is that it makes post-publication data management smoother. If the data is already well organized, if it's well documented, on the scientific process, we can kind of see where that data management needs to happen. And I'm going to walk you through this. Some of you are probably familiar with this, but I think it's helpful to look at this with an eye towards where the data are. So in the scientific process, a scientist comes up with a research idea, and they go out and they read what has been done around that idea. And they conduct a literature review, and from there, they use that information and their idea to design an experiment, and they write a grant, which hopefully gets funded. At this point, data enters the picture, and the scientist will acquire raw data and do analysis and decide that they want to tune their experiment or do another experiment, and this goes through a cycle, many, many, many iterations of acquisition and analysis. And at some point in this cycle, the scientists might share their data. Maybe. It depends. They might show it to a peer. They might show it to a colleague at their local institution. But it's very, very limited sharing. So it's slightly different than what we're seeing in this big open data sharing movement. Once a scientist has figured out what their data are telling them and has done this acquisition and analysis to a certain point that they have a story, they make that data presentational, write a paper, submit it, and publish it, and then we're off into post-publication area, which I'm not going to really discuss. But if you look at this process, you really see that data are in the area where I've bolded here, and in acquisition of data and data analysis. And in most of the sciences, this is really the domain of the laboratory notebook. Scientists are conducting research, they're writing notes in the laboratory notebook, and the laboratory notebook is being used as a principal tool for managing and organizing and giving context to data generated in the lab. So let's look at what laboratory notebooks look like right now. And I think, you know, looking at this will show you that there is a really big need for data management because we're in this really divided area right now where the digital revolution is really caught up to scientists except dealing with notebooks. So all of the data that we're generating, those are mostly digital, but most scientists are still keeping paper notes, and this presents lots of problems, particularly searching. That, I think, is one of the biggest problems. Effectively, to find data, you need to search two totally different systems to find information about one experiment, because you have to have the metadata, which is the notes you've written in your laboratory notebook, to describe the data, which probably exist on 1, 2, 3 computers. And so you have to do the searching, and to make it worse, the organization schemes for your digital files and your paper notebooks are probably not the same. So paper notebooks are usually organized chronologically. There's no real standard for digital file organization. So when I was a chemist, I had to look through a previous graduate student's research notes and try to figure out what she did with her data, and it was very difficult. So this is a really big problem right now. Other concerns about where we are at in this divided data metadata region is long-term concerns with keeping data and metadata together. Obviously, if you're having your data and metadata in two different formats, it's going to be a problem. You're likely to lose one or the other, or they're going to get separated over time. Compounding this is the issue of backups. Most people are good about backing up their digital information. Many, many lab notebooks don't have backups. There's just one copy. It's sitting on a shelf in a laboratory, and if that laboratory has a flood or a fire, that notebook could be lost, and all that research, you know, cannot be used or looked back and referenced. So obviously, these are some really big challenges, and to compound all of this are varying practices. So even if somebody has some way of organizing their information, the practices vary laboratory to laboratory and researcher to researcher. So two people working next to each other in the laboratory probably won't be able to find each other's data because they're using entirely different systems, and that's a big problem. So to solve some of these problems, we're looking at electronic laboratory notebooks, and this is really the way that we're heading. So everything is going digital, not just the data, but also all the research notes are going to be digital. And before I jump into the pros and cons of electronic laboratory notebooks, which you'll see me abbreviate as ELNs, just because it's a lot easier than always typing out electronic laboratory notebook. So ELN, that's what that means. I did want to say that I am not endorsing any particular laboratory notebook software package in this talk. I'm going to cover software packages that UW-Madison, my institution, has looked into. We haven't licensed anything in particular. We've done a few trials. But I think if you get anything out of this talk, it's more how to choose a good software package, and whatever works for you is work for you. But the things I'm bringing up are the ones that I'm familiar with. That's not to say that they're the best or the only ones available. Okay, just wanted to throw that out there. So getting into the positives of an electronic laboratory notebook, one of the biggest ones is easier searching. When you have all of your information be digital, when all of your notes are digital, you can search those notes much more easily. And when you find those notes, you can find the data associated with those notes because everything is in one place. So you're no longer needing to search twice. And you have a more robust search than before. Adding to this robustness is the ability to link between pages in a laboratory notebook. So you can have a standard procedure, and instead of having to rewrite that procedure or flip through pages and find out where that procedure is, scientists can just drop a link into that procedure. And that really helps reinforce these connections in the notebook. Nice thing I like about eLab notebooks is a certain amount of customization. When scientists are looking at a notebook, I think it's important to have some customization. You don't want too much, you don't want too little, but a good amount of customization helps you really make the laboratory notebook your own, and that just makes the data management easier and more efficient. Another thing about eLab notebooks is easier sharing. And I know this is an area that scientists are concerned about. They don't really like to share a lot of their unpublished data. So along with sharing is a very controlled sharing. A good laboratory notebook will let you control who has access to what information down to the file, down to the folder. So I can say colleague A has access to this folder and can read and write to this folder, and colleague B has access to just this page and can only read it. And here at UW, we have a data stewardship policy that says that the PIs on our campus are stewards of the data. So at the very least, the PIs have to have a copy of all of the research notes that their researchers are using. So in this area, having sharing in an eLab notebook is actually very good, because it means that the researcher and the PI both have copies of the data in the long term. So sharing is actually something that is good in an eLab notebook, but it needs to be very, very controlled. The final thing I like about eLab notebooks, and I'm saying this particularly as someone who's concerned about data management, is an audit trail. And I really see this as taking two forms. E-signatures, so a good eLab notebook will have some way of verifying who is doing what and will track who is contributing what to the notebook. The other part of the audit trail is a revision history. So an eLab notebook should keep track of changes that are made to the notebook. I mean, this is very much like when I was in freshman chemistry and we were taught you never erase anything from your notebook. You only, if you write something incorrectly, you draw a line through it and that's it. So you laboratory records, there is some need for honesty, there is a need for trust in those records, and having a revision history gives you that trust in those records. So I think that's very important to have. So these are kind of the upsides I see of moving to an eLab notebook in the future, but there are obviously some things that are downsides, and one of the biggest ones is just going all electronic, because you have to deal with bugs and upgrades and other digital issues that may arise. That's not to say that paper lab notebooks aren't without their own issues, but they're different. Paper is fragile, and bytes are fragile in their own way. Another concern about eLab notebooks is it does take some effort to transition. It is a big change in how we're operating in the laboratory, and that needs to be taken into account. One thing that concerns me right now is it's very much an unsettled eLab notebook market. I view us as being in the first generation of eLab notebooks. There are some very good products out there, but products are coming, products are going, and the products we're looking at today might not be here in 5 to 10 years. So the question is, if we put our information into an eLaboratory notebook right now, will we be able to use that information in 10 years? And this is just a question of, you know, the software, but it's also a question of file formats, because I forget who said this, but we've been able to read papyri from thousands of years ago, but we can't necessarily read digital files for 10 years ago. So one of the biggest things I see about this unsettled eLab notebook market is having the ability to get our data out in a way that we can use it in another 10 years. So it needs to be sustainable. A few last things about kind of the downsides of eLab notebooks are dealing with storage, and this is both a location and ownership issue, because some of the eLab notebooks out there are cloud-based, and a lot of federal and state funding requires that any data generated off of grants be stored in the U.S., and so if you're dealing with cloud-based storage for your research data, you need to be sure that the data is stored in the U.S. most likely. It is stored in the U.S. The other thing when you're dealing with cloud storage is just the ownership. Who really owns it if you're putting your data out there for somebody else? And that needs to be clear, and hopefully the data is being stored in a secure way. So that's something to look into. It will obviously vary by notebooks, and some notebooks just avoid this question by being installed on a local server and accessed locally. And finally, I think one of the big challenges is just data security and backups. I really think that the people cannot adopt an eLab notebook without having a reliable infrastructure in place. You need to be able to back up that information, and you need to be able to access it and not have it go down all the time. So that's just a very base level requirement for going towards eLab notebooks. So I want to talk, now that I've mentioned some of the pros and cons about eLab notebooks, I want to talk about a recent pilot that we did here at UW-Madison. I wasn't involved with it, but I've been keeping an eye on it because I think the results are very interesting. The results actually just came out, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago, so it's very recent information. But here at UW, we tested two notebooks. We tested a product called Surf and a product called ECAT, and we had 55 users doing these tests, the majority of which had never used an eLab notebook before. The main consensus was that people liked ECAT and people did not like Surf. But what was more interesting is at the end of the pilot, they surveyed everyone, and 91% of the respondents to the survey said they wanted to continue using an eLab notebook, which included all the people who were using Surf. 60% of those people did not want to use an eLab notebook, did not want to use Surf anymore, but they still wanted to use an eLab notebook. So even though they had a product that really wasn't working for them, it didn't live up to their expectations, they were still swayed by using an eLab notebook, which I think is a really good sign. Now, obviously, these are people self-selecting to be part of this pilot who are interested in eLab notebooks, but I think it's a good sign that most of them came out of the pilot still wanting to keep records this way. And many of them, a lot of the ECAT users, actually found that they kept better records through an eLab notebook than they did in a paper notebook. A few other highlights of this pilot include the time it took for people to learn the interface and to get used to using an eLab notebook instead of a paper notebook. And the estimate was being under 12 hours. And most people utilized training sessions provided by the pilot organizers and trial and error. So I think those two things, if you're considering moving to an eLab notebook, training sessions will probably be helpful. In terms of what users liked and didn't like, the two top things that the users liked were linking between pages in the notebook and adding external data files into the notebook, so having everything be in the notebook. The two things they didn't like very much were drawing tools and mobile versions. And it's not exactly clear why these two scored so poorly. It might have been that these two features in the products that were tested were not very good, or it might have been that people used them and found that they were not as useful as they expected them to be. It wasn't clear from the survey, but I think it's kind of interesting to identify those nonetheless. There's obviously a lot more information here than what I'm just talking about. If you're interested, you can go to DeWitt Academic Technology website. There's a full report, and it goes into more detail, but I'm just giving you the highlights to give a sense of how researchers, at least on my campus, have had this experience with eLab notebooks. So now that I've given you a background in kind of where we are in terms of data management in the laboratory around eLab notebooks, I want to spend the rest of my talk looking at how librarians can really help in this information. And I'm breaking that down into five main areas. I think that librarians can teach basic information organization skills to scientists. That's just a big one that will help right away. Another area that we can help is preserving old notebooks. The last three areas where I think we can help deal with eLab notebooks, and I think it's really important, and if you only get one thing out of my talk, is to know the properties of a good eLab notebook, because that's going to allow you to have these conversations with people on choosing a good eLab notebook, and that's going to let you support the transition to a good eLab notebook. So I'm going to talk about these a little more in depth, each of them right now. So, in terms of teaching basic information organization, I really think this is our wheelhouse. I mean, this is effectively surrogate records, because the problem scientists are having right now is that they're recording metadata in their notebook. They're recording information about the experiment, but they're also recording information about the digital files in their notebook, and they need that metadata to point to a file which is on a totally different system, and they need help organizing those digital files. So, you know, in my mind, that's surrogate records. So I don't think that there's one particular excellent way in one system that scientists need to be using. I think that they need to be using a system, some way of linking the metadata in their notebook to the digital files that they have more strongly. So I don't have any particular recommendations for you, but I think that's something that we can work with scientists, see what they need, and really help them in this area. The other thing that I think we can do is just some basic file name and organization conventions. We can definitely teach this information. Things like avoiding strange characters in file names and using underscores instead of spaces. Another thing I think will help very much is dating files and do it consistently. As I mentioned before, lab notebooks are usually organized chronologically, but a lot of times files aren't labeled with date. But by simply putting a date on the file, you can now look at that file and say, oh, that corresponds to December 7th, 2012, and jump into the notebook and know exactly where you're going because you have a date, and it lets you go through the notebook much more quickly. So I think that's actually a very helpful thing that scientists can start doing. Another thing I think might be helpful is kind of dealing with this organization and labeling folders with reference to the notebook. So if I have a Briony Notebook 4 folder and the subfolder with the date, and in that folder I have all of my data, that's going to really allow me to be looking at the data saying, oh, this is this date in this notebook, and pull that notebook off the shelf and have really quick access to that information. So basically, what we need to be teaching scientists is good organization skills, good metadata skills, and really pulling together the metadata and the digital information. And this is, you know, this is our bread and butter. This is what we do. In addition to teaching basic organization skills, I think that we can help scientists by looking at their old paper notebooks. And I think it might be worth asking the questions, should we add lab notebooks to our library collection? I know here at UW there's a few people in the chemistry department who have lab notebooks in the collection. And you can see I've got this image on the left, and you know, this is what can happen to a laboratory notebook in a chemistry lab. You have chemistry spill, you spill chemicals, your ink bleeds, and pretty soon you have no research notes. So I think in a lot of cases the laboratory notebooks might just be safer in a library over a lab. But a better question might be, you know, what do retiring scientists do with notebooks at your institution? And related to this, just a little fun fact, is that when somebody applies for a patent, the data that's used to support that patent needs to be retained for over 26 years. That's 20 years of the life of the patent, 6 years post-patent, and any time it takes to develop that invention. So if you have scientists at your institution doing work that leads to patents, that information needs to be held on to in a long time, and it's possible that the institution might own the patent and the researcher is no longer there, but that data still needs to be around. So it's worth looking at these old paper notebooks. I'm not guaranteeing that every single notebook needs to be preserved, but it's a conversation you can have, and it starts leading to bigger conversations about lab notebooks in general between scientists and librarians. So those are two ideas that I have about dealing with this paper notebook and this paper digital divide. The rest of my talk is really going to focus on the eLab notebook and what we as librarians can do to help. And the first thing I think is, and this is probably the most important talk on my slide, because I think this is the information that I'm really trying to get out there in the world, because there's so many eLab notebook options and people need to know what makes a good eLab notebook. So I know I've said some of this before, but I'm going to say it again because it's that important. So at the very minimum, a good eLab notebook has the ability to take notes and to search those notes. If it doesn't do that, it's not an eLab notebook. Adding to that, I would say that a good eLab notebook has the ability to put external data files into the notebook. This is actually very important to put everything in one place. A good eLab notebook will also add links between pages. This is not
as critical, but I think it's a really useful function of an eLab notebook, and I don't think it's that hard to achieve, so it's something to look for as well. A good eLab notebook will also let the scientist export their data. If you're putting information in, you should be able to bring it out again, at the very least to back it up, and maybe save it to another file format, print it. You have to get your data out. That's just a very basic requirement. A good eLab notebook will also have access permissions and control. This is controlled sharing, as well as having e-signatures to tell who's doing what. And finally, going back to this data management issue, is a good eLab notebook will log the revision history. And this is actually really important because I've spoken with some researchers who are using general note-taking software. I've heard Evernote as a common one. And this not having a log of revision history in software like Evernote is actually a big concern for me. And I can't recommend note-taking software for a laboratory notebook because it doesn't have this log of revision history. Laboratory notebooks are a special type of document. We have to be honest about what we're doing in our laboratory notebook. We have to have faith that those documents are really what they say they are and haven't been changed, and the log is how we do that. And the log is especially important when we are dealing with things like patents. If you are a scientist and want to patent something, and you can use an eLab notebook to support that information, that's perfectly valid, but having that log is really what's going to let you prove that you've actually done what you've done. So those are my main points of what a good eLab notebook is, and you can take those and spread them far and wide and talk to scientists about them, because I think this is really important as we go forward from this paper notebook to the electronic notebook. So now that we have an understanding of what a good eLab notebook is, I think we can start having conversations with our users about how to choose a good eLab notebook. And I really break this down into kind of four areas that to look into a little bit more and actually adopting an eLab notebook. First is a needs assessment, figuring out what the scientist needs. Second is testing the software. Third, having an adoption plan. And fourth, have an exit strategy. And I'll talk about these four points a little bit more in a second, but I do want to say here that when we're talking about choosing an eLab notebook, package. There are some packages out there that offer free or demo versions of the software, and I don't recommend those in the long term. I think they're really great for testing and for giving a sense of the interface, but those demo versions have limited features, and there's two things in particular that concern me about demo versions being used in the long term. First is that hosting might be happening outside of the US, and second is that there's no sharing in some of these free and demo versions. And those are two big things that I think are really important. And for those reasons, I can't recommend using free or demo versions of this software in the long term. That being said, I've played with many free and demo versions, and I think it gives a good sense of what eLab notebooks can do. So feel free to go out and play with them, but don't adopt that in the long term. All right, keep saying all these caveats, but I think they're really important. So let's talk a little bit more about the needs assessment. So when we're talking with scientists, it's important to ask some questions about what they need in their eLab notebook in order to choose the right product and whether those needs are really critical or just things that they might like. So one of the basic questions is, how much does the scientist want to integrate the eLab notebook into the workflow, and how much customization they want? Some lab notebooks allow you to read data from an instrument directly, or to have the instrument dump the data into a particular folder, which the eLab notebook will harvest, and some of those things might be appealing to a scientist. So those are good questions to ask. Do I need to share? And I think at minimum the answer is probably yes. Where should the information be stored? Can it be cloud-based? Or do I want to have a local server? And if scientists are looking at local servers, can they support the infrastructure of that server? Can they do all the IT necessary to keep that server running? And the final question is, how much can the scientist spend? Lab notebooks have a huge variety of costs. They are ranging from the end being open source and free all the way up to $1,000 per person per year, which is a lot. Most of the notebooks are in the middle of that range. Notebook companies are starting to get into the academic market more in the last year or two, so the academic prices are going to be lower than the prices for businesses. So it's worth thinking about how much a scientist can spend, and in the context of looking at laboratory notebooks. So once a scientist figures out what they need and looks for some products, I think it's very, very important that the scientist test the software before adopting it. An eLab notebook, as I pointed out in the previous slide, it can be a big financial investment, and it does take time and effort to transition to an eLab notebook. Additionally, and one thing that we saw in the UW pilot was that not every software package is going to work for everyone. There was somebody who tested out ECAT, which was the software that most of the users liked, and didn't like it and wanted a different piece of software. So I think testing is really important. And some of the things you want to do during this test are to do a week, month-long test and have the scientists use the notebook as an actual notebook, and to look at those features in depth like they would be using it in the normal day-to-day laboratory. And I think it's really important to keep both paper and electronic laboratory records during the test. At the very least, print out the electronic records. It's really not any worse than the paper laboratory notes we have right now, but there should be some backup. There should be some way, if the software doesn't work out, to revert back to paper. So with testing, it will take time, it will take effort, but I think it's really important. I liken it to buying a car. It's such a big thing that you're going to be using a lot, and you don't buy a car without a test drive, and I think it's really the same for an eLab notebook. So once the scientists have kind of figured out what they like, have tested some software, we talk about doing an adoption plan. And this is to kind of combat the large shift in workflow in adopting an ELM. And there are ways to do this. You can just say, everybody's in my group's going to be using an eLab notebook. That's just the way it is. But there's a few ideas to make that adoption a little bit more smooth. Adoption is a little bit easier at the beginning of a project. Or you can do a rolling adoption where new researchers to the group come in and use an eLab notebook right away. They often have to learn so much that what's one more piece of software. So in that sense, it's a little bit easier. But I do recommend a few things just about adoption, no matter kind of how hard or soft you decide to adopt an eLab notebook, is to put someone in charge of an installation. This can be kind of a group level person. This can be more of an institutional level person. But someone should be in charge, and that person can really act as the go-between between a lot of parties, because going over to an eLab notebook is going to require software support to make sure everything's working the way you expect, and IT support, especially around backup. So having somebody in charge is very helpful. They don't have to know all the answers, but they have to know who to talk to. So after the exit plan, and this is another thing kind of dealing with data management, is having an exit strategy. So as I mentioned, there's no guarantee that the lab notebooks that we're using right now will be here in 5 years. So we want something that writes to an open file format. Some of the things I've been seeing include PDF, XML, HTML, Word. At the worst, we need to be able to print out all of the pages of our notebook, and it would be very useful to have a batch method to do this. But even if at the end of the day all we're left with is a print copy of our notebook, again, that's really effectively the same as what we're doing right now. So those are kind of the four points that I think are important of talking with scientists and actually getting to figure out what they need and what software to use. I think librarians can also play a very important role in supporting the actual transition to an eLab notebook. And I view this as really involving several parties, the library included. The transition involves scientists who will be using the notebook, librarians, and IT who will probably be supporting and helping with the notebook. But a big question is, who is going to train these scientists? I've seen it where the IT department will look at a lab notebook and say, we're licensing the software, here go. So I think that the library can really offer the training here. And I really view this as falling under the umbrella of information literacy instruction. We teach all types of different software around information management. I mean, citation managers are a big one. I think eLab Notebook software is slightly different, but it's still information management, it's still information literacy and data management. Another benefit I see about offering training on eLab Notebook software is it's a great opportunity to sneak in basic data management instructions. So while we're talking about eLab Notebooks, we can also say, and here's how you should be formatting your files and your file names. So at an academic setting, the people I'm targeting in this instruction are graduate students, because those are the people who are doing most of the research on my campus, and focusing on research groups, because I think when you get a research group on one system as a whole and who are doing things the same way and using the same tools, I think that that improves conditions for everybody in that group, because it makes sharing more easy. The other thing, last thing I think librarians can do to support the transition to the eLab notebooks is just to keep an eye on the changing market. The two things I'm going to keep an eye out for are products coalescing market share. Things are not settled yet, but they will be in 5-10 years, and I'm going to be looking for who the winners are. And another thing to keep an eye out for is developing standards. We don't really have any standards right now in the field. That will happen, and so I think that's an important thing to keep an eye on. So basically what I want to say around eLab Notebooks and data management is that the future really is in the eLab Notebook, and they will help with data management in the laboratory, because in some ways they will make best practices just automated, which is great. And I think that ELNs by the end of my career are just going to become the norm. People are adopting them now, though. We're seeing a lot of adoption in industry right now. We're seeing some adoption in academia. And that's only going to grow more and more in the coming years. So we're right on the cusp. We're right on the cusp of this. It's a very exciting time. But it's going to be maybe 5-10 years before the market coalesces. And definitely the enterprise market is ahead of where we are in academia. But that's not to say that there aren't good things out there now for our scientists to be using. But there's going to be some sorting that's necessary, sorting through the bad programs to find the good programs. So the last thing is, I think that there are a lot of benefits and some risks in adopting an eLab notebook, but keeping a paper notebook has its own risks, even though they're different. If your scientists or you are worried that the risks are too big, wait a few years, things will settle down. So I hope you've enjoyed my talk. I hope you learned a little bit about eLab notebooks, lab notebooks, and that scientists really need help with the pre-publication area of data management. You know, that's their biggest concern when they think about data management. And part of this concern stems from paper laboratory notebooks, because they're really problematic to have paper notes in a digital world. And eLab notebooks can really solve a lot of the problems with paper lab notebooks, but they have some of their own concerns. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity for librarians to help here by teaching good digital organization skills, helping preserve old paper notebooks, and really speaking with our scientists on what makes a good eLab notebook, and really supporting the transition to them, because eLab notebooks are just the way things are going. So with that, I wanted to point out a few resources for you. There's a really nice pamphlet from the National Cancer Institute on just general good practices for keeping a laboratory notebook. If you're less familiar with what a laboratory notebook is about and how it's slightly different than normal record keeping, I encourage you to just check out that pamphlet. It's an easy read. If you want something more in-depth, I love this book, this Kinnear book on writing the laboratory notebook. It's very thorough. I get very excited about it, but I'm too excited about lab notebooks. The other thing I mentioned in this talk was this eLab notebook pilot that we just did at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. The report is up online, and you're welcome to check that out. So with that, I want to thank the Chemistry and Pharma Divisions of the SLA for letting me speak with you today. I want to thank a few people at UW for giving me a lot of information that's gone into this talk, Jan Cheatham and Victoria Sutton. And I will also say that if you're interested in this talk or might have missed something and didn't get to write it down, the talk will be available on the website for the winter virtual conference. And I've also put the slides up on my SlideShare. The presentation's under a Creative Commons license, so feel free to use this information to share it. All I ask is you attribute it back to me, but get the information out there. That will make me incredibly happy. So with that, I want to thank you very much for listening to me speak. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Kristen. Just as a reminder for those attendees who are listening and have questions, as Kristen mentioned, slides will be available on her SlideShare site, as well as both slides and audio will be posted to the Pharma Division website for the winter virtual conference. For questions that you may have that you're holding on to, if you would submit those via the chat window to the organizer, which is SLA Unit Webinars, we'll address those. Some of the ones that already exist, Kristen, speaking to your pilot, what was the population? Was it chemists? Was it biologists? What was the population that you tried this out on?
It was actually kind of mixed. I know there were a few chemists in there. The ECAT software was supported by the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences on campus and actually got co-opted into the pilot. So we helped expand that installation and supported it through the pilot. So I know some chemists, some biologists, some agriculture and life science people. It was trying to get a mix of people around campus.
Okay. Another question. What were the main objections that did exist? I seem to remember that the stat that you had pulled up was 91% of those involved in the pilot said, hey, we want to continue doing this. The question that has come up is, what objections were there that were voiced?
You know, that's a good question, and I'm trying to remember if they asked that specifically in the survey. I think a lot of what they asked were what you liked and what you didn't like about particular features. I'm not sure off the top of my head if there were any particular reasons why people didn't like the ELN. I know that one of the software choices just did not, it did the basic function of record keeping, but the extra features didn't really work very well, and I'm not sure if that, you know, that 9% who didn't want to keep using an eLab notebook were turned off because of that particular software package. So it might be in the pilot report, but I don't remember it off the top of my head. Sorry.
No, no problems. And as far as the implementation, what was the time period of the implementation? How long?
It was a few months. I think it was, how long was it? It was 3 to 6 months. Yeah. So long enough for people to get comfortable with the software, but not too long.
Hi, Kristen. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. Sorry. Did you get my question?
I don't think so.
Okay. So as far as the implementation, what was the timing? How long did it take to fully implement?
Yeah. The actual test? Yeah, I think it was 3 to 6 months. It took a while to organize everything. Everything went out for bid, so the actual pilot process was quite long, but I think that the scientists had the software for under 6 months.
Great. If there are any other questions, please go ahead and send them now. I don't see any at this point. Certainly, Kristen, thanks for presenting, and if anybody has any other questions, you can definitely address those directly to Kristen. At this point, we'll stop and restart again at noon, which gives everybody about 15 minutes to go grab some lunch or make a bio break. So thanks again, Kristen, and we'll start again in 15 minutes.
Thank you.